Meet Sven. He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 26, 2009, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the internet. This is Chris Cosenza.
And this is Scott Long.
You know, I've never had this happen to me before, but have you ever gone on Tilt, Scott? And now that it's in itself is pretty common, but have you ever gone on Tilt from someone else?
Not for me, because I don't go on Tilt. I'm even keel at the table.
Have you ever gone on Tilt from someone else's hand?
That I can say I probably not have.
You're not even involved. I mean, I guess it could happen, like if you're on the bubble and you really want to make the money, and some other guy sucks out, and he had like deuce tray. But the other night, you and I were playing at the Silks at Tampa Bay Downs. We're playing in our Antioch Poker Cruise tournament,
right?
Where they're giving away some cruises, and we're back to back, right next to each other at the tables, and you and I leaned back and we're like, "You want to do it last longer?" So I was like, "Yeah, all right, what the hell?"
Yeah, because we had to, because we weren't really playing for anything.
Yeah,
we had like to we're gonna win a cruise to our own cruise. You know?
I was gonna sell it on, you know, on the like scalp. I was gonna scalp it on the docks of Port Tampa, but no, but really, yeah. So we had to play for something. So we had a little last longer bet. And after the first, or I think it was the second break, you were kind of short stacked, and I had a pretty decent stack, so I was sweating like every hand you were playing. And I went over there, and you're like, "I'm all in. Every time I go all in against one of these guys, somebody's got ace king, and I gotta lay the hand down, you know." And so I get over there, and you got queen jack, and a guy, of course, has ace king against you, and I'm like, "Oh, me likey, I think I'm gonna win this bet." Flop comes with a king, and I'm like, "Boo yeah, I'm going to win the last longer. This is awesome." And then the turn was, what, a jack, and then the river was... No, how did that work out?
No. There was an ace and king on board, and
yeah,
came down to the river, and the only thing that could save me was a beautiful little 10. I called for it, and the dealer obliged.
I was just like, that was it. That put me on tilt. I'm like, this guy's like freaking Cher and Roaches. He just won't die. But, yeah, it almost sent me on tilt. I mean, ultimately, you went out, and I ended up winning the bet. But I can't believe it. That's never happened to me before, where someone else's hand put me on tilt. And you're over there loving it, too.
Yeah, you know, and I felt bad a little later, because I was cheering for my 10. I don't normally cheer at the table, unless, of course, it's a hand between you and Faso, and I'm cheering for Faso. But you know, these guys are in this tournament, and they're playing for a cruise, and I'm like, "Yes, 10! And I know they all knew that we were just having a little friendly thing, but I'm like, I kind of felt bad later that I didn't.
I started thinking the same thing, because I was like standing over that guy's shoulder, and I'm like, we're getting loud, and we're like, "Come on about it!" And I'm like, this poor guy is sitting there trying to win a cruise, and we're like having fun at his expense. And yeah, I felt kind of bad, but it was a good night. We had a lot of fun. A lot of people talked to us about the cruise in the magazine, And then someone talked to you afterward.
Yeah, I was going to say, the fun continued after the tournament was over.
This is an unbelievable story.
Yeah, and I apologize in advance if this guy actually listens to the show, because I'm not really making fun of him. He was totally mortified at the end of this whole hullabaloo that I'm going to discuss here. But you got to admit, it's pretty funny.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
All right, so the tournament was over. I was still hanging out at the Silks. Just finished playing a sit and go or something. My phone rings, and it's a guy that says, "Hey, I was just at the Antioch Poker Cruise tournament, and I finished fifth. and nobody else at my table at the table knew anything about the cruise. So doesn't that mean that I get the cruise? And so after a little stunned silence, I'm like, no. First place and second place got cruises. Doesn't really matter whether they knew about it or not. And so we go back and forth, and then I had to tell them that even though this was a free entry tournament, there was some and pre-registration in advance, like he was. We had some no-shows, so we let some walk-ins in. So there probably was a chance that some people were in the tournament didn't really know what they're playing for.
Yeah.
They just heard it, hey, free tournament, and they stampeded to the gates, right?
Yep.
And then I explained to him, you know, hey, so he kept going back, well, shouldn't I get the cruise? I'm like, nah, no, first place and second place got the cruise and money, and third through tenth got cash. And he's like, well, I finished fifth and I didn't get any cash. I should have got a cash at least, right? And I'm like, oh boy, now this call's getting really bad. I'm like, how did this guy not get paid? You know, because I was sitting there watching, and the poker room manager actually sat at the final table, the entire final table, and paid it out himself. So it's illogical to me.
Yeah.
To think that this guy finished, got up, and walked away. No one realized that he didn't get paid, including him, right? So luckily, the poker room manager was still there. It was a day off. He was still hanging out. So I'm like, okay, hold on. I'll go ask him. So I talked to him, told him, and he's like, oh, I paid everyone. So I'm like, all right, can you talk to this guy? I don't really know. I don't know what's going on. So he takes the phone. He starts talking. And then I hear him say something like, you paid someone $45 to play? And I'm like, oh, boy. Oh, boy. And he's like, no, it was a free entry. You shouldn't pay to anybody. It was free to get in. And so he started describing you, Chris, because you were handling registration for most of it. And at this point, I'm like, it started to dawn on me. I wonder if this guy went to some totally different room. You know, we're giving away a lot of rooms here, are giving away cruise package and stuff. Maybe he just got confused. And I'm like, oh, my God, that'd be unfortunate. And right when I'm thinking that, the poker room manager, I'm over here in the conversation, is like, he's like, what escalator? We don't have an escalator here. And I'm like, so I'm waving at him. I'm like, I think we both realized at the same time this guy was a totally wrong place. So it turns out this guy went to Tampa Greyhound Track, not Tampa Bay Downs.
Wow.
Went up and paid $45 to enter some other tournament. Got all the way to fifth place. And didn't get any money out of it, and had no idea until this phone call that he was in the wrong place. No wonder no one knew anything about the cruise.
You would think that he would stop the tournament and say, aren't we playing for cruises? Isn't it the end of, why am I paying $45 for this free roll?
Well, you know, I guess, but you know, this is kind of the running gag in our, my marriage with Laura says, you know, we had to go to a restaurant, and, you know, I just don't speak up about stuff. If, you know, if I get... they get the wrong food, as long as it looks good, I don't know, I'll eat it, whatever. You know, it's food's food, right? So, you know, I'm a little quieter guy, so maybe I wouldn't necessarily ask, because I wouldn't want to be embarrassed to say, hey, what's going on? Where's the cruise at?
Right.
And I'd just be waiting for somebody else to come up. But, you know, at some point, I think when I get up, I'm like, hey, where's the cruise at?
Well,
so, yeah, I don't know. But, yeah. And I called the guy back after that, and he was, like I said, he was totally mortified. He's like, oh, you know, the last event, and this event was sponsored by our good friends at 620 DAE, where we normally tape the podcast.
Yeah.
And their last event was at, or one of their last events was at Tampa Greyhound. He just, you know, got mixed up in his mind. So it happens. It can happen.
And he was laughing about it afterwards.
Too. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, just because it can happen doesn't mean that it's not funny.
Well, at the very least, we got at least some PR with the people that were there about the cruise. You know, he was talking up the cruise to all these people. Maybe that turned them on to coming on board, so that'd be good. That's hilarious.
Well, yeah, it was great hanging out with a lot of new fans there at the show, at the tournament. And and we have one more event coming up soon where people can meet up with us, and that's out in Vegas, Chris.
Yeah, one last time we're going to remind everyone, because we're headed out pretty soon. So 9 p.m. Vegas time, July 2nd in the sports book at Caesars. And Caesars is a nice room. I like that room.
And oh, yeah, great room. Yeah.
And, you know, if we get enough people, like eight players or so, we'll go to the brush and say, hey, you know, spread a table for us. We're the Annie Up Nation. Do as we please. And if that doesn't happen, then, you know, there's plenty of other things going on that we could do. So But we're hoping to get enough people to show up July 2nd and have a little meetup.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Eric, of course, you know, sometimes when we have kind of our no swag a second time
yeah.
on a fifth roll here at Annie Up. So, you know, we don't want people hogging the swag. But we don't want them to quit communicating with us when they have important questions that need to be answered, right?
Right. We'll just call this mailbag emeritus is what we'll call
yes,
it.
Yes. There we go. Very good. Nice. Right at the top of your head there. I like it. So we got an email from Michael, who's won some swag recently, and he had a couple questions. So we'll tackle one here on this show. And he says he finds that he can never do well in tournaments unless he starts early with a big stack, which usually comes from a run of excellent cards. And normally he's nursing a short stack in survival mode for a couple rounds. And the guys that knock him out have him dominated many times over. He says he knows this is part of improving his play, but he wants some advice on how to build a stack early, aside from getting hit in the head by the deck.
Yeah, we're going to have to refer this to another poker show, I think. You and I don't think you and I know anything about any of that. So, actually, the few times lately that I've gotten a big stack early, it's because it was either a really good structure where I could, you know, speculate hands and stuff, mm-hmm. or I just realized, you know, I sort of pinpointed players at the table that I knew would overvalue their hands and so would target them later. But really, aside from getting the big hands, like he said, the best way to do it is to really just categorize your players and attack them accordingly. To me, that's how I would do it.
Yeah.
Or you know, find a structure that lets you speculate. So if you're playing a few hands that could really win a big pot, you know, if you're playing suited connectors for a raise, that kind of thing, or you know, and then trap somebody with a big hand. You know, if you don't find a structure like that, if you have a structure that's accelerated like a turbo thing, then you're just going to be, you know, luck of the draw kind of thing. So that's how I usually get my stacks. I'm not saying it always works, but if I do get a big stack, that's usually how I get it.
Yeah, and I've been really working hard on trying to do this because it's a big weakness in my game because I'm a fairly tight player. And he's right. If you don't get cards early on and you're a tight player, you're going to eventually find yourself short stack. And so I've been watching some players that are a little more aggressive. And I think what I've decided I need to do, maybe Michael needs to do this too, is be a little bolder. I mean, take a few more risks early on. I mean, not crazy risk, but risk at the right time. You know, maybe do some check raise or do a big raise when you have maybe something like second pair, you know, a hand that you might call and or check and hope to improve and, you know, try to chip up that way. I mean, a lot of times if you're playing against an aggressive players, they're betting a lot of the time. So, I mean, if you are a tight player and you make a big bet, they're going to lay it down.
Yeah, I agree. I think doing things against what you are used to doing is how you're going to improve because you're going to see what works and what doesn't work. And then if you're doing something that you're not used to doing, they can't ever put you on a pattern or a hand because if you're not used to doing it, how could they be used to you doing it? So I agree.
Yeah.
I think that's good advice. So, you know, I tried that out at Derby Lane this week when I played in the Antioch Poker Tour event.
Yeah.
It just failed miserably.
Well, that's the thing. It's going to fail.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, really, that's what separates players in No Limit Hold'em is the ones that are willing to fail or take that chance. And it's not always going to work out. But
that's what they say. If you're not failing once in a while, you're not trying enough new things. So that's what I would do. I would do like you said. Just if you don't do what I said, do what Scott said and try to, you know what I mean? Just make a combination of those two things that we advise them on, and it should work out.
Absolutely.
Well, it's time for our Annie Up News Desk.
Got some interesting stuff this week, Chris. It's
yeah,
cool.
I'm really looking forward to this.
All right, let's start. You heard it first on last week's Antioch PokerCast. The Poker Players Alliance says July 19th to the 25th will be National Poker Week. The week will include a political rally and charity tournament in Washington, D.C., and the introduction of three new websites, nationalpokerweek.com, pokerpetition.com, and mypokerstory.com, that all will help advance PP efforts towards getting new and better laws.
Awesome. I hear some big names are going to be there, too, like you said last week, so that should be really good.
Yeah, yeah, and these websites I think are going to be interesting. I mean, the Poker Petition one I think is going to kind of help generate a lot of names and stuff. And so check those out. The best poker players from Europe and the Americas are set to battle it out at this year's World Series of Poker Europe in the Caesars Cup, a unique Ryder Cup-style poker tournament that pits teams of the best players from both sides of the Atlantic against each other. The Caesars Cup is a made-for-television special that will air on ESPN-branded channels.
So that's a lot like their World Cup that they already have, only now it's just between Europe and America, so that's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, and, you know, we keep picking on the ESPN television schedule for the WSOP, but they seem to be doing a lot more of these taping special events kind of things. You know, it's not Omaha on TV that I think we want to see. but, you know, they're trying to get creative.
I know who I want to be the captain of the American team.
Ah, Chris Cosenza?
No, Paul Azinger.
Oh, Paul Azinger.
Of course.
Yeah, but, you know.
Well, he's just a captain. He's just a strategist.
He's a golfer turned poker player. We need maybe a poker player turned golfer.
Well, that's pretty much every player in Vegas.
Yeah, all right, then finally, PokerBotBasics.com, a small website dedicated to poker bots, plans to run a contest beginning August 1st to find the most bot-friendly online poker room as voted on by its users. The winning room will get $10,000.
What the hell does that mean? I don't understand. Are you telling me that poker bots are trying to find the best site to have a poker bot on? Because that's illegal.
Well, yeah. I think what this guy's trying to do, and he's a one-man show that created this website, he's trying to let online poker rooms know that they shouldn't be against bots, that bots are steadily at the table and generating rake for them, and they should be embraced. And so what he's trying to do is get the poker rooms to actually say, all right, I want to be considered. And they have to enter this for free, I think. And then I think his users, which aren't bots, but who control little armies of bots, I'm guessing, will be the ones voting on, what room's going to get $10,000, which, you know, can make or break an online room these days, $10,000.
God, that's just Poker Stars, Attack of the Clones. You got to be kidding me. Yeah, I could just see one of these rooms stepping forward and saying, hey, we're the most friendliest bot room on the... Oh, my God, this is going to fail miserably. You better update us down the road, Scott, because that's going to fail miserably.
But, you know, I give this guy credit. I think this is like one of those things where you put out there, you don't really assume anybody's going to take it seriously, but it got folks like us talking about it.
That's true.
A little free marketing for his website that I will not repeat because it's free advertising.
Yeah, don't rewind the show. This is an Anti-Up breaking news report. Ray Foley, an Anti-Up national who goes by the name Wired Pear in all Apes tournaments, has won Event 39 at the 2009 World Series of Poker, a $1,500 buy-in no-limit hold'em tournament. Foley, from Northville, Michigan, is a 37-year-old employee of Chrysler Financial who started playing poker about 5 years ago. He says he supplemented his income in recent years by playing poker and has contemplated turning pro given the problems of the American automotive industry. Foley collected $657,969 for first place and, of course, the coveted WSOP gold bracelet. According to official records, Foley now has one win, one final table appearance, and four cashes at the WSOP. He has accumulated nearly $735,000 in World Series winnings. When asked about winning the World Series bracelet and the $660,000, he said, quote, "They both mean a lot. The bracelet, I can't even, it's still unbelievable at this point that I have a bracelet. I can't even describe it. And $660,000, that's a lot of money. It's hard to believe there were 2,715 people in this tournament," end quote. Congratulations, Ray, from everyone in the Anti-Up Nation. All right, well, we're going to move on to our hotline here. It's 813-448-1120. Just because we're on Skype doesn't mean we can't hear the phone ringing. And we got Mike from Joyzy calling us, talking about home games with rules and just like a casino. So let's see what he has to say.
Hey, Chris and Scott, Mike from New Jersey. And we keep the rules as followed by casino rules, If it would happen in Atlantic City and how it would be disputed, then that's how we're going to handle it. And even if you're not aware of the rule, that's the way it should be handled. There's a set of rules that you have to follow. I think that you can't have, I think there needs to be hard and fast rules. Whether the person knowingly does it, it has to be held up no matter what you do, because that keeps the game fair for everyone. There's not a, Bassman did this one time and he didn't know, and so we kind of handle it this way. You have to handle it the same way every time. That way it's fair. You know, there's I don't think there's a gray area. I think you designate a set of rules, you follow by them, and when an issue comes up, it's handled, and that's the way it's carried out in the future. It's the best way that everybody knows the game is fair and consistent.
All right. I think he has a point, and this is what we were talking about a little bit last week, that whether there should be some gray area, and of course he's saying that there is no gray area, and I'm not going to fault him for that at all. I think that's a reasonable way of running your home game. In fact, actually a good read. But unfortunately, there is a gray area that he didn't address, and he didn't mention whether his home game, he has an outside dealer who's dealing the game and not participating in the game.
Right.
So if that is the case, then he's right. There is no gray in his game. However, my guess is it's like our home game, and the players are also the dealers.
Right.
And that's where the gray comes in, I think, because you can't be a dealer and a player at the same time and still, in my mind, expect that there won't be mistakes that are honest mistakes.
Yeah.
Because the dealer in a casino, his job isn't just to pitch cards. It's to run the game.
Yep.
To make sure the bets are correct, to make sure the rules are followed. And I think it's just tough when you're playing a home game. I mean, a couple of examples that we've talked about have come when a player is a dealer and accidentally puts his cards down on the deck. I mean, that's just not going to happen at a casino.
Yep.
The dealer's not playing. So that's where the gray area comes in. Now, I'm still not advocating that we should embrace that gray area. I'm just saying that's where the gray area comes in and makes it a little more difficult, I think.
Yeah. Do you ever envision, like, home games posting rules? I guess they would do that, right?
I think some players probably do have rules, and it's probably a good way to go.
Yeah.
You know, I totally understand his consistency thing, and when thinking about the dealer thing, you know, it occurred to me that one way around that is to have the dealer sit out.
Sit out. I was thinking the same thing as you were talking about.
Playing, and that would eliminate the gray area, I think.
Yeah.
So that might be a way to go. You know, I hadn't thought about that until we just started talking about
it.
Yeah, so.
as you were talking about it, I thought the same thing. I said, if the dealer sits out every time they deal, then yeah, that might eliminate at least most of the gray area. So that's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good call.
To get some help with dealing, I think we have something cool for him.
Yeah, obviously Mike has a home game, so this is going to be a great addition to his home game, a Wheeler Dealer Motorized Dealer from the good folks at WheelRDealer.com.
That thing is awesome.
It's
like a little jet engine in there. It just throws the cards. It's like the coolest thing ever. I like that thing.
Yeah, it's not a substitute dealer that'll solve that problem, but it makes it a little easier for the guy dealing the cards not to muck his hand into the cards.
All right,
so Mike, send us your address, and we will get that Wheeler Dealer out to you right away. And everybody else, call that hotline, like Chris said, and you could win some swag, too.
Do you want me to read the mailbag?
Sure, go for it.
All right, this comes from Don. I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name. He begins with the letter M.
And from St. Louis.
Yeah, he says, chips, especially in the poker room, seem really dirty. People joke about the chips sticking together and to wash your hands before using the bathroom because you don't want what's on your hands from the chips touching you anywhere, you know. So he says, there was one time at Ameristar in St. Louis where they had a dealer sitting at an empty table cleaning chips by hand. He says, I don't know if something gross had happened to those chips or if they were punishing the dealer, but it gave me comfort that they gave some thought to cleaning them. Now, here's the thing, we got some stuff here to react to it, but I think even in our magazine, our good friend Doc Toscano had written a column about what's on the chips and can you get really sick from and everything like that.
Yeah.
There had been a couple of things, even by Bluff Magazine, that, you know, not surveys, but actual research done, where really it's, you're not going to get anything from these chips, really. You know, it's just, you're not going to get, like, you know, the Ebola virus or whatever that. So, but anyway, a lot of people have talked about what you should do when you're playing chips. Whenever I try to go to a casino, I always try to wash my hands before I go, wash my hands after I leave, and I try to take like an airborne before I go.
And you know, a lot of rooms are installing these little hand sanitizer stuff too, which I love. I think that's a good trend that's going to take off. But Don sent us this question because he saw it was the question of the day in the Las Vegas Advisor, and I went back and looked at their answer, and they asked a couple of people, and one of the answers was that most casinos don't wash chips because they have denominations printed on them, and by washing them, they're worried that the denominations are going to wear off.
Yeah.
So, but they do wash non-denomination chips like those at the roulette table, Or I guess maybe that'd be tournament chips, which is probably what maybe Don saw.
Yeah, yeah.
Though I guess it all depends how the chips are made. And then I was reading Casino Player this week, and they did had a question about the cards. And they said, yeah, absolutely. The plastic poker cards are washed pretty regularly in rooms.
Yeah, they probably put them like in a little sack or satch or something and then just throw them in the machine or whatever, right?
Yeah, they got like a little drying plate, too, I think is what they went and said. You know, they wash them off and they let them kind of put them out to dry, kind of like the, you know, your laundry back in like a Little House on the Prairie days.
I can just see now, like, poker room managers using little clothespins and hanging up one card at a time on the line.
Wouldn't that be great?
That'd be awesome.
But the Casino Player answer I thought was a little funny, that they said that obviously they're only washing plastic cards used in the poker room because the ones used in blackjack are made of paper and, of course,
yeah,
you know, disintegrate.
Yeah.
But then they went on to say that it's not that important that cards that have stains on them be removed from poker like it is in blackjack. They're like, yeah, of course. Yeah, no one really minds stained cards in a poker game.
Hey, let me ask you, how come they don't use plastic cards in, like, blackjack?
You know, that's a good question. Maybe because of cost?
Yeah, maybe.
I think the paper cards are cheaper.
Eventually. I mean,
I think there's also some rules about how, you know, they want to take the cards out of commission, you know, if they get marked or dinged or something. And so, I don't know. Maybe.
You know, this reminds me. Last night I watched Ocean's 13 for the first time. Have you ever seen that one?
I have not yet fallen into that trap.
Well, there's one scene where they find this automatic shuffler for blackjack, and some guy tries to rig it so that it'll deal 21 to everyone and then a bust hand or whatever to the dealer. And I'm like, that can't happen. It doesn't know what the cards are. You know, so I just thought, you know, here they are. They spend all this money to try to come up with these elaborate plans for breaking a casino, and they can't even come up with a shuffler plan to make 21. They got to make up something that can't possibly happen.
No, we just talked to the before the show that we need to quit going off on tangents because the show's getting too long.
True.
But now you started me on a tangent, and real quickly, I think somebody out there could make some technology that would read the cards. You know, I went to the bank this week and deposited a big wad of ante-up cash, and the woman said, do you mind if I run this through the counter? And I'm like, oh, sure. And they have a little counter machine back there that reads all the bills.
Yeah,
and
but
boom,
seconds
later, it's got a count. So why can't you do the cards?
It reads the bills, like specifically what bills are, or is it put like stacks of hundreds in one?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Maybe
that's
not.
All right, well, let's tell him what he won before we go off on another tangent.
All right, Don, you've won a wonderful card protector from PokerFaces.tv. Imagine it might be a nuts, maybe a bad beat. I'll see what I'm in the mood to send you. You take that over to Maristar and be sure to wash it every once in a while.
Yeah, I was going to say, you promised to drop it in some alcohol before you send it out, right?
So, Don, send us your address. We'll get that off to you and everybody else. Send your questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And you, too, may be on a future mailbag with swag ready to send.
Greetings. This is Columbo from pokerwannabe.blogspot.com. And this is another one-minute mystery, The Case of the Musical Interlude. It's a no-limit hold'em cash game played with deep stacks and low stakes, $1, $2. I feel we have a relatively standard image here.
Surprising, to say the least.
Under the gun folds, under the gun plus one folds, and the middle position player raises it to 6. I look down at ace of diamonds, queen of diamonds. Now, I could raise here or call with position, but because I'm in the mid position myself, I elect to raise and discourage any more players with a hand that I feel plays better heads up. Because I am in mid position myself, I elect to raise and discourage any more players with a starting hand that plays better heads up. I make it 14 to go. It folds all the way back around to the original raiser, who, as expected, calls.
I'm not afraid, sir.
Heads up, we see a flop of Jack of Spades, Ace of Hearts, Ten of Clubs, and our opponent checks. I figure he missed this by a mile, and in a moment of weakness, I check. The turn now is an Eight of Clubs, and my opponent checks again. This time, I take advantage, and I bet $15, or about half the pot. He calls, The pot is now $61, and the river is the 7 of diamonds. My opponent, after a small delay, now bets out 44. So, what do you want to do now?
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited. He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Finally, we're going to talk about a game that I really feel like I could win. You know, I may say it other weeks, you know, like the 8K mix. I thought I was a favorite to do well, and I did okay. But Stud 8 is my favorite game now. It's absolutely my favorite game. And I've said that before on the show. And I really feel like if I play well, I can cash in this event and maybe even final table or take it down. So I'm going to do my best to really – and I'm going to give out some good tips today with you and hope that everyone really – especially if you don't play the game regularly, take these tips to heart because they're really the basics, what you really need to know, really good power tips to play this game well. So,
and real quickly, we'll remind everybody that Wednesday night is at 9 p.m. Eastern on Poker Stars is the free roll for the Stud 8 Apes event. And Chris, you and I will be just getting to Vegas, so hopefully we can play.
Yeah, we'll both have laptops. I'm just hoping that we'll find a place that we can sit down and get a good connection and play.
And figures, too.
The one, you know, free roll that I really want to play and earn my seed in, we have to fly 3 hours or 5 hours the other way first, you know.
And then, of course, the actual event will be on July 15th, also at 9 p.m. Eastern, also on PokerStars.com. $5 plus 50 cents to get you in to win that wonderful banana and stuffed monkey from PokerStars and lots of cash and adulation from the entire nation.
And if you want to learn any more about the actual event, just go to antiupmagazine.com/apes. That's A-I-P-S. All right, why don't you kick us off with your first tip?
All right, my first tip is like the one and only tip that you need to remember. If you only remember one tip, I think Chris and I will agree this is the tip you need to remember.
Yes.
Scoop or get out of the way. The object of this game is to scoop. Not get just half the pot. You want to scoop the whole pot. So you need to have two-way hands, maybe like low flushes or straights are good ones. And you generally want to avoid big pairs because big pairs aren't going to get you the low half.
That's right.
And you want to scoop.
Of course, we're going to reference Todd Brunson throughout this thing because he wrote the greatest chapter known to man on this. And well, you mentioned low there, so I'll give you my first tip. If you really don't know anything about this game, but you want to play with apes, you want to play with us and stuff, if it's your first time playing or if you're just not comfortable playing high hands yet in it, just be sure to go low. And then that way you can hope to back into a high hand as well to do what Scott said and scoop. That's the platinum rule. You want to scoop, so if you go low, you can know you're going to win the low, and then you can also back into a high. So just remember, go low if you're uncomfortable with this game.
Yeah, and you know, if people that are used to playing stud are probably going to see like split kings and get all excited, and I think that's what we're talking about. You stick with the low, because then that can develop into a high. A high hand can never develop into a low hand.
Yeah, really. So
you know, unless you get five straight cards.
You know? Can't forget that. Always
those kings are not going to help your low.
That's right.
And I guess we should pause and say for people who haven't played that stud 8 is an 8 or better game, so you need to have 5 cards 8 or lower.
Unpaired
cards 8 or lower, or there is no low. So, I mean, a high hand could win the entire pot if there's no low, but you don't want to take that chance.
Right, which is a way to scoop. You could scoop with a high hand only, but really you don't want that to be, you know, if you're rolled up kings or something like that, obviously you're going to play them, but, you know, just be careful, be wary when you're playing high hands only.
Exactly. All right, my second tip, keep your eye on the fives and the tens.
And tens.
You need a 5 or a 10 to make a straight, so that makes a 5 an incredibly powerful card when trying to scoop. Make sure you know who has or had a 5, and also who needs one.
That's a good point. You know, a lot of people hear that, and they always think they translate it to hold'em, and if they have a 5 or a 10 in their hand, they play it because they think, well, I can't make a straight unless I have a 5 or a 10 in my hand. And that's just totally ruins their whole game, throws them off balance for a while. But yeah, absolutely. It's people don't think of it that way, but you can't make a straight without a 5 or a 10, and neither can your opponents. So if you have a lot of 5s in your hand, the likelihood of them making their straight, you know, if they're going low, is not as good as if you didn't have a 5 or a lot of 5s. So just always something to keep in the back of your mind.
And there's a little caveat there, too. I mean, you don't need a 5 to have a good low hand. I mean, you could have a 6 low. Yeah. It's still a pretty powerful low hand. But they're going to have other cards in their hand to make a high hand. So that's again, we're worrying about the scoop here. So.
Yes. Well, speaking of scoop, then, if you're going to go low, don't start with 8-7. Any hand like that with an 8 and a 7 and a deuce, that hand's not going to scoop. And if you're going to make a low, you're making the worst low possible, an 8-7. So be thinking that when you are going low, think about, can this hand not only win the low, but develop into a high? You know, 8-7 might develop into a straight, but really it's going to be a middling straight, and then you probably aren't going to make a good low to scoop, so you're only playing for half the pot. So stay away from 8-7, 8-6, you know, that kind of low. You know, be thinking 3 really small babies when you're going low.
When we say babies, we mean newborns, infants.
We.
Not toddlers. All right, my final tip, number 3, whip saw away. If you're in a multi-way pot with one half locked up and two or more opponents battling for the other half, make them pay, Chris.
Yes.
Because half of every bet you put in is going to come right back to you, and a lot more of that if you have scoop potential on top.
Absolutely. And you know, another thing that's a little branch of this tip is, you know, if you're only going low, but you know you have it locked up and you're against a heads-up opponent, still keep betting, because it's not like there's a rake in a tournament. It's not like you're going to lose money. You never know if he's going to, you know, outthink his hand and say, oh, my God, he might have a straight here. I'm going to lay it down. So don't forget to keep betting, whether you're in the whipsaw or not.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as you got it locked up.
I mean, and this is why stud 8 is so much fun, I think, is when you get in those three-handed things and you know you've got one half locked up and the other two are battling for the other one, you just punish them, and they probably know they're being punished. At least one of them probably knows they're being punished,
yeah,
and the other one's probably being an idiot by raising, knowing that half the money's going to you. So those are the great times. I mean, you get one of those great whipsaw hands and man, you're gonna play stud 8 for the rest of your life.
That's how I got hooked. Okay, my last one, avoid the middles, and by I mean the middle cards. As Todd Brunson would say, 3 big, 3 little, but never 3 in the middle.
I love Harry Rems. That's a great rap.
Yeah, that's a good rap song. But, you know, what that means is, like, let's say you have a 9 door card. Your hand is so transparent because this hand's going to need a ton of help to scoop high and low. And everyone knows if you have a 9, you're either going with a flush or you got a big pair underneath or you're rolled up. So once the card doesn't match your suit on 4th Street, they're going to pummel you. They're going to start hitting you with, okay, you want to try to make your flush, you're going to met. You know, you're going to have to pay. And then if you do have a big pair, they can play accordingly. So really, a 9 showing, or even a 10, hands like that, those middling cards, they're really just dangerous, and they need a lot of help for you to scoop. And remember the platinum rule, scoop in stud 8.
Have to scoop. You have to scoop. All right, those weren't bad. I mean, there's certainly better tips than Zorag put on our forum at antiupmagazine.com forum.
Yeah,
I think
take
he
those
was trying.
Serious.
He was trying to trip some folks up so he can defend his title, and we appreciate the humor. But
yeah,
don't listen to our tips. Our tips are good.
Yeah, don't be don't be following those tips of his, man. Those are brutal.
Hi, this is Team PokerStars Pro Vanessa Russo, and you're listening to the Anti-Up PokerCast.
You gotta fight for your right to play!
All right, we got a limit hold'em hand again, Chris. I'll pause for you to sigh.
You're just determined to make me a limit player, aren't you?
But this came during the 8-game mix on PokerStars and Apes. Actually, it wasn't during Apes. I think it was one of those practice tournaments that people were having. But lots of Anti-Up Nationals in this hand, of course. But we will hide the names to protect the guilty. And but this comes from Eric Wellman. And he says he's not normally a limit player, so he wants to know whether he played this correctly. And I'll be happy to tell him. And you will sit there and
and take it like a man.
And not bet aggressively enough or anything like that, because you don't have your all-in nuclear bomb option. Oh, I love having power over the hand of the week, or I could just make fun of you at will.
I know. I put up with it every week.
All right, so this is, of course, an 8-game mix with six max, which is important.
Yeah.
Six players at the table, and our hero has 2,000 in chips. He is the short stack at the table. The big stacks are 75 and 9,000, so he's got a... he's taking like a butter knife to this fight.
Yeah.
Okay. He is in the big blind. There is a raise and a fold, a call, and it gets to us. The small blind called, and it gets to us in the big blind with nine of hearts, seven of spades.
Oh, man. I don't know. You know...
The raise came from the big stack, and the call came from the second big stack, if that influences at all.
All right. Well, obviously, I'm not a limit player, but I think I'm laying that hand down. You said I'm the small blind, right?
No, we're the big blind.
Oh, we're the big blind. Okay. So, yeah, even so, though, I mean, you don't know. You just no. I mean, I just don't want this hand. I don't like it. I would fold it. But since I'm playing as if I'm our friend here, I guess I would just call. Obviously, I'm not going to raise, so I guess I call. But I don't like the call here, Scott. You might.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. I mean, it's only another bet to us, so, I mean, you got a lot of chips already in there for one more bet. It's a hand that you could flop a straight on and maybe get paid off, so I kind of like that. But the other thing is we are looking at limits of 163.20 right now.
And you said we had 2,000 in chips?
We have 2,000 in chips. So I find that you get wrapped up in hands and limit, you could really drain your bank, I mean your stack, very quickly, particularly if you get a piece of this. So,
well, here's the thing. If it was a raise, it made, what, 320 then to go?
Yes. So, yeah, we need to call 160 more. We already have 160 in because we're the big blind. So, I mean, that's not a significant chunk of our chip stack, but it very easily could turn into a significant check.
Well, you don't think that's significant? A sixth of your stack? That's pretty big.
All right. Okay. Well, fine. Yeah.
Well, I mean, right? Isn't that? That's
it is
pretty
a lot. Yeah.
320 chips. I mean, I guess it's 160 more, so then it's, you know, 10%. But really, 320 is what you're now committed to this. And you always talk about, you know, limit hold'em is about saving bets and whatever, right? So. Oh my God! I just I can't
and I guess
imagine.
That's what I was getting at is that if we had a lot of chips in front of us or it was early in the tournament, I'm probably going to call this almost every time and see if I get a good nice flop. But now when chips are low and I'm looking at a player who's already raised and another player, they both have a lot of chips.
And out of position.
Yeah, I think I might just pass on this and hope for something better in the small blind. And I've got enough chips that I'm going to get a couple more cracks at a better hand at a better position. So,
yeah,
I guess we're both going to fold here.
Okay, but since we're playing it, we'll move on. And yeah, I would obviously just call if I'm going to play it. Obviously, I'm not going to do something stupid. And
of course not.
Anyway, so.
Right.
Okay, so let's see what happens.
All right, so we call, and the flop comes seven of clubs, eight of spades, jack of clubs. So we hit bottom pair. We've got a gut shot. And the small blind, which, mind you, was not the initial raiser, bets out into us.
Ooh. Well, that could be a draw. I'm interested in seeing what the raiser does now. But really, again, I think we were hoping to hit two pair or an open-ended draw with this hand since we're not going to make a flush draw with offsuit cards. I think we're really hoping to hit trips, two pair, or at least an open-ended draw to make it worth calling. Since we only got one pair and a gut shot, I just can't see myself improving to the winning hand. And even if I make my gut shot, you know, if the 10 comes, even that, somebody could easily have 9-queen suited. You know, I'm done with this hand.
And we've got two clubs out there, so that's one less 10 that we can count on.
Yes, I'm done with this hand.
Really, yeah, I think you're right. If we call this hand, we were looking for at least two pair.
Yep.
An open-ended straight might be be interesting to me, but I really want two pair of trips here to be moving on, and certainly not bottom pair. The straight draw is somewhat intriguing, but it's just not intriguing enough to call another 160, and we still have the initial raiser behind us who very likely could raise, and then we're calling another 320, and then we're committed to this hand.
Yeah, no way. I mean, that's, you look at, if you call that 160, even if you're not raised behind, that's 580 chips you put into the pot on this hand, and you started with 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I'm done with this hand.
Okay, well, that would not be a very exciting hand of the week. So our hero calls. Now, he wonders, though, whether he should have raised here to isolate against one of the other two, which is an intriguing question. But, again, with our chip stack, if we raise here, we are definitely committed. And I don't think we're going to get the small blind to fold. And we still don't know what the initial raiser had. So I don't know whether I really want to – again, our chip stack is what's killing us here.
Well, I already said I'm done with the hand, so I'm not answering you.
Again, but in a deeper stack with more time, it might be interesting to do a raise here and really find out where people are. But
God, a raise would be sick, especially with the initial raiser behind you.
Yeah.
That's why
it might have a possibility of working.
Yeah, I mean, if you had like ace-king. But then again, if it was you behind me with ace-king, you would 3-bet it or whatever because you're like, hey, I took the lead. I have ace-king. I'm raising. So I'm definitely done with this hand, but I would definitely not raise if I was going to play it any further. Way too many hands beat me right now.
All right, so our hero, of course, calls, and the initial raiser just calls.
Oh, that's interesting.
All right, the turn comes a 7 of hearts. Did we get lucky here?
That's pretty damn lucky right now. I don't know if it's going to be lucky in the end, but if on the outside, it feels like it's lucky. Feels like we made a nice little call there, but you know, it's hand of the week, so anything can happen.
No, I mean, I tell you, if you're short stacked like this, you make that call on the flop that neither one of us would have made, and then you hit the 7. That's when you're like, oh, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Calling out Father Paul and like, you know, put in a good word with me for the big guy because he delivered for me, and I learned my lesson, and I'll never do this again after winning this hand. That's kind of what I tell myself when that happens.
Oh my God.
And get this, the small blind's going to bet out into us.
Wow. Well, you know what? This small blind has something. So to do that, this small blind has to have something, man. So if that 7 paired you, it might have paired him too, but it might have filled him up or something. So, wow. God, I think I'd still be cautious here. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, you know, oh boy. You know, it's tough because there's still a lot of draws out there. I mean, obviously, some of the draws are going to be slowed down now by the pair on board, but oh boy.
Wow.
And you still got the initial raiser behind us who, you know, slowed down on the flop, but.
Yeah, he could be slow playing something, too.
You know, we very well might have the best hand right here, but we may not be the favorite still. There might be a lot of draws out there that are going to.
Yeah.
That beat us. So the
thing is, though, is now we're committed.
And I guess that's it. We're committed now, so we might as well raise and get the money in and hope that that maybe gets the initial raiser out, and so we're just heads up.
Yeah.
And maybe put some doubt in our small blind, and you know maybe we're able to somehow take it down to the bet on the river, which I don't see is possible, but
yeah.
If you're committed, you might as well get the money in now, right?
Calling
it off later.
You're not going to fold 3-7s, and you're hoping that somebody's got an overpair here, you know, like an ace-jack or a draw, like a 9, you know, I don't know, 9-6 clubs or something, I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, you're not going to fold this hand now. I don't think you're going to fold it, so you might as well get it all in, because what are you going to do with... God, you're going to have, what, 400 chips left if you just check call the rest of the way? Not even. So, yeah, you might as well just get it all in now and see what happens.
All right, so that's what our hero does. He raises, gets the initial raiser out of the way, gets back to the small blind, who raises again. 3 bets.
We're beat.
Uh-oh.
we are beat, man. That guy's got 9-10, or he slow played a set, now he's got a boat. We are beat there. There is no way that this guy's on a draw now, so we are beat.
All right, that brings up an interesting point here. That leaves us with 570 behind. I think you're right. We definitely are beat here. So do you fold and try to nurse that very tiny stack?
Or do you call and hope to hit
something that's going to improve you and beat them?
Well, you inevitably will get that stack up to like 5,000 chips somehow. So you could fold. I couldn't. I would just hope that the guy has a straight and I got 10 outs to fill up, or one out to quad up against his boat, you know. But you have patience like that. You know how to play the short stack in limit games. Me, I'd be done. That's it. So, 500 with the blinds at 160, 320. Yeah, no, that ain't happening. I'm getting all in with 3-7s and saying, hey, I had 3-7s, you know.
Well, we got so much of our chip stack yet, I guess it makes sense just to call and hope for the best here.
Yeah.
But, again, I hate putting money in when I think I'm beat.
Yeah, I know. But there's still a chance that this guy has a straight. And he's just protecting his hand, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm hoping that maybe I can fill up. There's just so much money in the pot now, and I have so little in front of me. There's no way I'm going to come back from 500. So I'm just getting on.
All right. Well, let me pose another question here. Mathematically, we could still get by calling here and calling the river bet and still have chips left in case we were wrong.
True. Of course, the next hand you're automatically in a small blind, right?
Yeah, that's true.
That's another 80.
But anything can happen. Chip in a chair, right?
Yes, that's true. That's true. And I think that's a defeatist or anything. I just think that I have already the small stack, and I've got 3-7s. It's not going to get much better than that.
No, what I'm saying, though, is your stack really going to be that much better by getting that last, 250 of your stack in here versus the power of surviving, even if it's just for one more hand to get lucky on?
Yeah.
I don't see anything to gain. I don't think the gain here outweighs the risk. I would just call this bet. I would call the river.
Yeah.
And, if I have the best hand, great. I got a lot more chips now, and, you know, who cares if I didn't get an extra 250 out of the guy?
Yeah,
but if
I'm
wrong, then I have 250 left, and, anything can happen on the next hand.
Yeah, you make a good point. Hearing it from you as you described the hand, I'm positive we're beat. But in the heat of the battle, I may not have thought that, and I may have just got it all in. But like hearing it now, I'm positive we're just beat right now. So yeah, if I could have that kind of savvy while I'm playing live, I would. I would keep the 250 or keep it to 250, and then try to hit something miracle on the next hand or the hand after. But in the heat of the battle, I'm not that savvy, and I'm getting it all in.
All right. Okay, well, our hero goes ahead and raises it. He's going to take this to the mat, caps it. The river comes to 10 of diamonds.
Dope! Oh.
And he says, and our hero says, and there's the straight with his super scary 250 chips on the table in front of me.
Man. I'm
not going to bet this guy out. It doesn't matter because the small blind goes ahead and puts us all in. Of course, we have to call now, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm still not confident with a one card straight, but man, yeah, well, that's good. We made our straight. I just don't know if it's going to be enough.
All right, now we both thought that we were behind on the turn. So, do you think that we improved to win here?
No, I think we may have. If we're fortunate, we split. I think the guy may have already had a 9-10, you know, and that's why he was betting it so strong. Or he has a boat and we're behind. But if we were ahead or whatever, and I think that we only got a tie here if we were behind and it's not like a boat. I don't think that we won this hand. It seems like it's either 9-10 or like, I don't know, pocket jacks or pocket eights that he slow played. So it's one of those scenarios. So I don't think we won this hand. I think we split it or we still lost.
All right. We're going to say we lost this hand. Our hero tables 8 of clubs. 8 of diamonds.
Oh, you mean the small blind? Okay, so we
he did have a
boat. Oh yeah,
had a boat.
You could tell by that raise on the turn that he had to have a big hand.
Well, yeah, he bet out again and then raised again. So
yeah.
I mean, he was probably ecstatic that he was getting that kind of action. He had with the third nuts there and plenty of chips to play with.
If we had folded, we would have had 2,000 chips still. If we'd folded preflop, so
yep.
Yep. Yeah, it's just a good reason to get away from that hand. You know, it's just not a good hand. It's just not, you know, especially when you're short stacked. When I'm short stacked, I'm looking to push a big hand. I'm not looking to try to hit, you know, lightning in a bottle. You know what I mean? So that's too bad. Yeah. That's too bad that he was behind and he makes a straight on top of it and still loses.
Well, he also makes a point, as I said at the beginning of the hand, that he's not a limit player. So I do find this as a trap for no limit players, is that are, you know, they get sucked into a hand and you just can't get out because it's just one more bet.
Yeah.
It's always just one more bet, you know, unless there's a, you know, a raise and a re-raise and then it's called, and it sucks you in.
Yep.
And so it makes it even more important to make good decisions early on in a hand, I think, so you avoid getting sucked down into that trap.
And that's that whole save a bet thing that they talk about in limit. Extract a bet and save a bet. So in this case, you probably should have saved a bet, which would have saved you 8 bets, you know, or whatever, six bets. So, wow, that's too bad. But you know what, though? The good news is he won something.
That's right. And Eric, send us your address, and we will send you a beautiful set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhands.com. I don't know what they'll say about 9-7 offsuit, but I'm guessing it won't be one of the pretty colors. But that's all right. Live and learn.
Do you think they have the black hole setting on those the strategy cards? Because I think that 9-7 belongs right in there. Well, we're going to be in Vegas pretty soon, so hopefully we'll be able to play in the free roll. But another good show. Use our tips wisely, and good luck in Apes. So I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we will see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.